Good evening. This is Friday's edition of Between the Headlines with me, Reza Ghazim. We are coming to you live from our studios in London. Thank you so much for joining us. We have, as usual, two guests on tonight's show. First up, and on my right, Stefan Simanovitz, political analyst. And alongside him, Abdullah Al-Andalusi, co-founder of Muslim Dawah Initiative. We appreciate your company tonight. On tonight's show, the police have prevented two Austrian tourists, a father and his 15-year-old son, from taking pictures of a bus station in Walthamstow. You must be thinking, why? According to these police officers who have paid valuable taxpayers' money to uphold the law, it is strictly forbidden to photograph anything to do with transport. Have you ever heard the police say such stupid things? Of course you have, because I've relayed this to you. Are you thinking, why have these stories taken so long to hit the main papers? Obama releases the torture carte blanche, but what else is he hiding? A UN conference on racism will be taking place in Geneva next week, but Obama's administration is not attending. Considering Obama's background and the associated history of racism in American society, America should have been at the forefront. But Israel doesn't want to be labeled as racist. They ran out of the last conference in 2001 crying that Muslims and Jews had united to call Zionist Israel a racist state. Hezbollah. Why is it bearing the brunt of the wrath of Egypt, the land of Pharaoh and the pharaohs? All this to come, but before then, we value your opinions here on Between the Headlines. Wherever you're watching this program in the world, if you have any comments on the show or the stories we've covered, then send us a text, SMS message on 4478008086. Now we're going to start off with our first story in The Guardian, and this one's not going away, I think, as far as police is concerned. G20 pictures show Tomlinson and police in earlier standoff, and they're talking about some of the issues that are raised within this story, that what is the Independent Police Complaints Commission doing about this, and where is this actually going to go, and some of the points that were made by the IPCC with regards to this. Nick Hardwick, the chair of the IPCC, was that they didn't have any cameras in the vicinity, and after that he had to retract that statement. And on top of that, another story that's also that we're going to be looking at and discussing is, again within The Guardian, it's looking at the police order tourists to delete photographs of bus station where the Austrian tourists had come to London and had been photographing a bus station in Walthamstow and have nothing to show for it when they went back to Austria for that particular story. And I just want to start off with those first one in particular and the role, Stefan, if I can start off with yourself. What do you make of the way that this whole thing has progressed and the timeline that it's taken for this kind of thing to unfold?
Well, it's actually unfolding very continually. And in fact, one of the interesting things that you might not have heard about, but the latest news from the Tomlinson inquiry is that there's been a fresh post-mortem that found that he didn't die from a heart attack, as was originally thought, but he died of abdominal bleeding, which suggests it's a result of perhaps some of the injuries he received at the hands of the police. So there might, instead of being just a normal inquiry, there might actually have to be a criminal investigation for manslaughter. This actually raises the bar on this story.
It's not looking good for the police, is it?
It's not. I mean, they've had a terrible week, actually, a couple of weeks. And it's actually a very historic moment in the perhaps the history of protesting and policing of protesting, because the big difference about this event was that every protester had a mobile phone or a camera, and there's so many images of the police brutality which happened at this demo. And I don't think this demo was particularly different, although they did use different techniques such as kettling, which hasn't been widely used before.
And one of the issues is that the police have brought in, or the government has brought in, an act that photographing police could actually be an issue and can be a problem because terrorists might get their images and so on. Now, if these mobile phones hadn't been there, we wouldn't have been here, would we?
That is a worrying new law. In fact, it's just come in this year that, in fact, it's illegal to photograph a policeman now. A policeman can take your camera off you. And they were doing that at the demonstrations at the G20. And that also ties in with your other story there about the Austrian tourists. Again, police can take the camera of anyone who's taking photographs of anything that might be of interest to terrorists, and that can be very broadly defined. So there is a danger that we are slipping into a not just a surveillance state where we're being watched all the time, but a police state where we are having our own rights curtailed in this way.
And Abdullah, if I can bring you in, because one of the comments that the Austrian tourist father actually said, I've never had these experiences anywhere, not even in communist countries. The fact that he was as a tourist come in, photographs of Walthamstow bus station, and he was taken. What do you make of how the police are acting and what's happening there?
Well, I mean, I find it's quite interesting. We're in a free country. It's advertised to the world as a free
so-called
country. Yeah, so-called free country. Although I guess freedom itself can be debated philosophically what that means. But and then for tourists to come in and not be allowed to take pictures of just, you know, simple places in the public sphere. Yet you can still find them on Google, on Google World. So, you know, if you want to be a terrorist, the moral story is don't take a picture, Google it. So,
free advert for Google here.
Exactly. I accept royalties. Anyway, so the problem is that this is now kind of got to a stage, this kind of surveillance state now, where a lot of freedom is being curtailed for the sake of security. But the kind of, you know, the kind of the four founders of, I guess, the modern free state, so to speak, like Benjamin Franklin, you know, said that anyone which curtails freedom for temporary security deserves neither. So they were more principled in their understanding that the whole, if you're going to live free, you might as well live free irrespective of dangers, and that's the point. But if you think, no, we must curtail our freedom to protect us from dangers, then you basically contradicted the own basis of the ideology of a free country. And I guess it's very troubling that a innocuous simple photograph can be viewed as, you know, a potential, make someone be a potential terror suspect, that their passport details and their hotel address has to be taken down.
Sure, and also, if I can slightly focus back on the Tomlinson one, in particular, the role of the group that is supposed to be looking after what the police are actually doing, the IPCC, it has been found wanting, hasn't it? Stefan, what are your comments?
It's a new body. I mean, it took the place of the police.
They've been around for 5 years now.
5 years now. They were a little bit wanting with the Jean-Charles de Menez's inquiry. Felt that their conclusions were a little bit less than satisfactory, as we could say. I think in this case, there's questions about the timeline, but it's still quite early days. And I think they recognise the importance of this story. There's been so much media coverage that I think it's too early to say the IPCC is an ineffectual body. And definitely it's a big improvement on the Police Complaints Commission, which was its predecessor, which was an internal body of policemen investigating
PCA.
Them. But interesting, I mean, one of the things that you were saying there, the interesting thing with both these cases is this way in which a new phrase has come, two new phrases, one of which is national security, the other one which is terrorism, which have been used almost indiscriminately. And I'm not saying this country, I mean, this story about the Austrian tourists is a very unusual story. I've never heard of anything like that before myself, apart from in airports, you know, you obviously certain places.
Sure.
But I think this thing of terrorism and national security is being used in a blanket way for a whole plethora of new laws and restrictions.
Okay, and if I can put, just ask you, Abdullah, what do you make of this, the IPCC? Stefan, new body, 5 years, still coming to terms with what it needs to do. Another case comes to mind is the Barbara Ahmed case, in which he was put in a prostrating position, asked, where is your God now? The IPCC conducted a trial and said, committee commended the officers for bravery, and recently they've actually come out and admitted that they did all of that and all that thuggery and so on. The normal process that was followed didn't actually work. What do you make of the IPCC here?
Well, I think the IPCC doesn't live on a political island, separate from the context it exists. It's been, you know, commissioned, but it also recognises that it lives in a kind of a political context whereby, if it was to show that the police being institutionally racist, which the police service was described in a recent investigation, then it could undermine people's confidence in the police. And there's political ramifications for this. And for them, they perhaps want to think about balancing the public good with the need for accountability, which I think what we should do is have full scrupulous accountability, irrespective of people's confidence, not the police. It's up for the police to do their job properly, to earn public confidence, not by by getting people to twist their stories to maintain their aura of respectability.
Okay, just to keep on that kind of theme, but slightly different take on it, is a Trivial Pursuit that turned the town hall snoopers into tyrants, where minor things are being followed by councils and so on. Very quickly, Stefan, if I can bring you in, what do you make of this, how it's going?
Well, again, this is legislation which was designed to tackle terrorism and serious crime, which has been misused. And as you see, some of these quite comical cases where parents are trying to get their children into a certain school because and they're being surveyed by the local council. These kind
of civil rights groups warned of that at the time, didn't they? But they weren't listened to.
Well, it's being misused. I mean, that's the thing. The actual regulations are there, but they've been used now by 795 different bodies have used this regulation in inappropriate ways. So it's pushing the boundaries of the surveillance society.
Abdullah, quick comment on this one?
I'll say that I think there's debate here about whether the government or local government should have enough powers to basically crack down on the criminality, but then this can be abused. There's an assumption that we can give as much power as we want to the government because they're always going to be benign. But they forget that the government is also human, and like any humans, can be subject to corruption. I think we have to reach a balance. And we also, as citizens in any country where we live in, we have to have certain social responsibilities that would preclude the government needing to have such controls. You know, the way to restrain government is for people to be more responsible.
Talking of restraining government, moving on to the next story, US has released the CIA memos on interrogations, but they're not going to be pursuing the people who've done some of the tortures. Abdullah, what do you make of the way that this is actually developing and where Obama's actually taken it? Positive move that he's actually released the names of these people?
Well, I think that first I'm not surprised. Obama will say, "Yes, look, here is the memos of the torture, but I'm not going to prosecute anyone." It's like Obama is very good on the talking and saying, "I promise that," but he's not doing anything. He's not putting his money where his mouth is. If you really want to have accountability, if you really want to build up America's respectability in the world, then really fight for the cause of justice and put people on trial for them. But and it was said by a senior official that now Obama is in the White House. He's having a different set of responsibilities now. He's sitting in the Oval Office. You see,
okay.
So this is a.
Okay, Stefan, what do you make of that? He's talking a lot, but not doing enough. Do you agree with that?
I agree. I think it's two steps forward and one step back. I think the fact that these memos have been released is a very good positive step. The fact that Obama, one of the first things he did was ban these torture techniques, is also a very positive thing. So that's more than just words. Having said that, not taking the next stage, taking it to the next stage and saying, well, who actually authorized these techniques and who actually carried them out and are we going to prosecute them? I think it is definitely turning a page, but it's almost like saying, well, we need investigation, we need to look at these things, but I'm not going to actually hold anyone to account. And that's a little bit dangerous.
And also, what about one thing that these articles or any of the articles on this issue that have come out in the papers today, talk about compensation for the victims who have been tortured and so on. No one is talking about that. Why? Abdullah, any comments, any thoughts on that?
Well, if you're going to talk about compensation, then you're going to have to think, well, how can you redress, torture? Torture is something, I mean, it's not just a simple word,
There's got to be some sort of redress, surely. I mean, there's got to be some kind of, or is that...
Well, I think there should be a redress, but I don't think it should, if it was just basically a quiet compensation, a backhand, I'd say no. Torture should be dealt with, anyone who deals with torture should be dealt in the same manner, which is subject to prosecution and the full weight of a law, if you indeed claim to champion justice.
Okay. With that one, we're going to move on to our next story. And interesting headline in The Guardian, West fears Muslim countries will hijack racism conference, instead of fear-raising tactics of the word hijacking and so on and so forth, leaves all sorts of interesting images in one's mind. But a lot of, about 80 countries or so attending this conference. Stefan, what do you think of this conference? Where is this going? Durban 2 has been sometimes
Durban
called.
2, yeah. I mean, it is a very ironic thing that the America's first black president is now planning to boycott this conference on racism. Having said that, it sounds like the U.S. ambassador, the U.S. UN ambassador Suzanne Rice wants to attend. Hillary Clinton doesn't want to attend, and Obama's sort of sitting in the middle somewhere. I think there's the first Durban conference did end up as a fiasco, and I think there's a desire that doesn't happen again.
Why did you say fiasco? Because a lot of the Muslims and Jews on the streets were out in Durban and so on in South Africa standing together and actually saying, hang on, Israel is a racist state. And that caused a problem?
That the Americans and the Israelis walked out and it kind of disintegrated a little bit. So, I mean, having said that, no, it did put a lot of important things on the table. It raised a lot of important issues. But the trouble with this conference is that these countries aren't even going to attend, not just America and Israel, but Canada and Germany and Italy. I mean, there's a whole raft of countries who are now saying, well, we're not going to, we've seen the documents that you're preparing to discuss, and we're not going to attend. And that is a great shame, and especially because President Ahmadinejad himself is attending. I think it would be a really good place to actually discuss really important issues of racism, which are the things that are tearing at the fabric of global society and unity.
Sure. Abdullah, this whole thing, shouldn't they? Why are they not attending? What's the reason for it? Why are they so afraid of this? Surely dialogue would be better. As in fact, some of these leaders keep saying, it would be better to get into some kind of engagement and so on.
I think, as Winston Churchill said, Britain doesn't have permanent allies, just permanent interests. Very Machiavellian kind of policy.
Disraeli, I think it was. But
Disraeli. Pervades a lot of Western governments' views to the world and so on. America in particular, for example, Bush didn't want to enter into this international, sign up to the International Court for America because he didn't want America to be subject to courts outside of America and so on. And again, Obama just repeating the same kind of line that Bush did, but albeit in a different circumstance now. And I wasn't surprised by this at all. And I also think that, I mean, I think a lot of the Muslim countries want to emphasize is that demonizing people for religion is just as bad as demonizing them for their race. But countries like, obviously, Israel and America, who Israel has been likened, obviously, to the apartheid South Africa, might fall foul of such, obviously, such a conference if it partakes in it, if it recognizes it, the outcome of it, and so on. So it wants to, for political reasons, but it would distance itself from it, like America does. And I think this is showing a bit of the hypocrisy behind America's calls for principles and justice and a new age of undoing the past and doing with the new and being just. I think this is a shame that Barack Obama has chosen to continue the American foreign policy.
And it's interesting that within this the anti-Muslim or anti-Semitic, all of those things, anti-Semitism isn't being sidelined. It's there at the centre of this. Mm-hmm. What's being added is the anti-Muslim sentiment or Islamophobia, and however you want to put it. And it's interesting, Jesse Jackson has told Barack Obama, nations are watching your administration, and reduced global participation would mark a significant setback. Mm-hmm. Despite this kind of desire from a civil rights activist to go on, it's still not going to happen? Stefan, final comment?
I don't think it is going to happen. I mean, it's starting on Monday, and it doesn't look like there's going to be any backing down. Now, I think it is a shame because it is standard procedure in these situations to have... I mean, not all nations are going to agree on everything. So you'll have a situation where you'll have a declaration, and certain countries can put reservations over certain paragraphs and say, well, we don't agree with this. And that would have been a way forward.
Okay, on that particular comment, we're going to move to the next paper, which is actually the Daily Star from Lebanon, and talking about Cairo mulling over barring Hezbollah ministers from visiting Egypt, be they in government or members of parliament and so on. It's how do you see this, Stefan, if I can start off with yourself, where do you see this going? Is this good for the Middle East?
It's not good. It's a shame, actually, because it sounds like it's just the beginning. It feels like it's the tip of a much larger iceberg, which started with the arrest of the 50 Hezbollah militants in Egyptian soil, and now the Egyptians are asking for a full apology.
Although only one person was a Hezbollah, is what Sheikh Nasrallah has said,
yeah.
But the others were Egyptian, Jordanian, and so on and so forth.
I'm just saying that this is being used as a way for the Egyptians to turn the screw on Hezbollah. They are demanding an apology. They're demanding, I think, information on anyone who is involved. They want people to be tried and going to court and go to prison. Not necessarily in Egypt, but this is the start of perhaps something much larger.
Yeah. And it's getting a bit personal as well against Sheikh Nasrallah Abdullah. Any comments on this particular?
Well, answer? I mean, I think this is a real case of a country in the Muslim world cracking down on freedom of speech and expression, because you heard the calls to not only arrest Nasrallah but to interrogate private newspaper editors and some political figures who within the Egypt that support him. And as we know, I mean, Egypt doesn't have a glowing track record of dealing with political dissidents in its country. In fact, I'm not surprised. They even said, for example, the Egyptian government said that Egypt is concerned about the Lebanese people. Since when? You know, its initial pretext was, we're cracking down Hezbollah because we're concerned about the Lebanese people. Since when has Egypt ever been concerned with the Lebanese people, especially during the Lebanon war and the bombings?
Thank you very much. We must leave it there. Thank you for staying with us. Let me thank my guests for tonight's show. They were Stefan Simanowicz and Abdullah Andalusi. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for watching. You can catch a repeat at 4:35 GMT. Please email comments to us at bth@presstv.co.uk. That's bth@presstv.co.uk. Did you agree with the comments from tonight's show? Well, whatever your opinion, send us a text, SMS from anywhere in the world on 4478008086. Messages are charged at your local operator rates. Amina Taylor's here for tomorrow's edition of Between the Headlines. From all of us on Friday's team, good night and khuda hafiz.